It's time for your wrestling nostalgia, and tonight we are taking a look back at one of the most heated feuds in WWE history, Triple H versus HBK, and specifically the Royal Rumble match that they had in 2004, the Last Man Standing match. We're going to get things going right now.
It's time for your weekly fix of wrestling nostalgia when we look at wrestling's past eras from the Attitude Era to the Reality Era.
I'd like to think that maybe this company will be better after Vince McMahon's dead, but the fact is it's going to get taken over by his idiotic daughter and his doofus son-in-law and the rest of his stupid family.
To today. Here on the WWE Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Wrestling Nostalgia episode for the week here on the WWE Podcast. We have a lot to discuss tonight with one of my favorite matches of all time. And I looked back and I said to myself, I don't think I've covered this. If one of my co-hosts did, I apologize. Obviously, we don't want to be duplicative here on this January 20th, 2021, Inauguration Day. So you are, at this point, you are either fearful of your life or you are elated about Trump leaving. And so there is that. So it's the best or worst day for you politically, depending obviously on which side you fall on. I'll let you to guess where I am, but I will remain anonymous and neutral because we're talking wrestling here. And it is one of the biggest heated and most heated rivalries of the Ruthless Aggression era, if not the most heated rivalry, you could argue, is Triple H, HBK, and one of my favorite matches that they ever had was the Last Man Standing match in 2004. Now, ironically, this coming Royal Rumble in 2021, we have another Last Man Standing match in Kevin Owens versus Roman Reigns. So I didn't plan that on purpose, but this particular match, as I was racking my brain today and keeping with the Royal Rumble theme, I came up with the 2004 HBK Triple H match. And if you haven't seen this, as I recommend with all of my wrestling nostalgia shows, it is a must watch if you're a wrestling fan. And it is a much more graphic match than obviously you're used to in today's PG era. This is still during the TV-14 phase. We had a few more years to go before WWE transitioned. And they certainly made use of blood and violence in this match, but a great story. That's the key here, is the story was so, so good. And really, the rivalry between these two started in 2002 upon HBK's return to the ring at SummerSlam to face Triple H. He beat Triple H with actually a sunset flip out of all things, and Triple H attempted to paralyze him, and you know, we know the rest of the story with HBK making his comeback, and they had a few matches in 2003 that were very, very good that continued into 2004 off and on. And again, this is really a masterpiece that is painted on the canvas of perfection when it comes to wrestling fans and what draws them to wrestling, what do they love and why they love it. I think, again, very subjective as all wrestling analysis and opinions are, that this is maybe the best match that Triple H and HBK had. And that's really a tall order to fulfill because of how many great matches that Triple H and HBK had. SummerSlam, again, 2002 was one. I think Bad Blood 2003 with their Hell in a Cell match, or was it a Three Stages of Hell match Three Stages of Hell that they had. They've had some absolute classics, and this is right up there. You can make a case for this one, no doubt. So we're going to dive into Triple H, HBK at the Royal Rumble in 2004, and of course give you kind of what led up to this, a little bit of the story, and give you the rest of the card to give you a sense of where we were in 2004. So we'll get in the DeLorean, so to speak. We'll get that flux capacitor going, and we will move into the year 2004 in just a minute. But while we remain in 2021, I want to thank you for making me and this show, the entire show, because this show, let's be honest, is not just about me at all. I mean, I have some great co-hosts, obviously great listeners who are making this show grow. And obviously very appreciative to you guys. And if you are looking to help out the show, head on over to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star rating and review. That is a great way, easy way, free way to help us out. If you want to, of course, support the show in other ways, you can at patreon.com/WWE podcast and subscribe and sign up. And guess what? You get the entire library ad free. So if you're tired of the ads and you just want to be able to lay down, sleep. Apparently some people sleep to my voice. I don't know if I'm doing ASMR or some kind of weird thing, but hey, whatever floats your boat. If you listen to me because you love to hate me, or you actually love me, or you are somewhere in between, or you're just going to sleep, well, however I can help, I guess that's why I'm here. But again, before I get going, one last thing is, you guys know the Botch guy, right? He's been on a few episodes here. We typically do pay-per-views and post-pay-per-view shows, and this Royal Rumble pay-per-view coming up in a week and a half is going to be no exception, right? Like, we're going to be hooking up and doing another co-show where he comes on and we discuss the Royal Rumble, and that's going to be a ton of fun because I'm sure there's going to be major, major things to discuss. And so that'll be coming. But more importantly, if you haven't subscribed to The Botch Guy, number one, what are you doing, right? Like, get yourself ready for WrestleMania season. Subscribe to The Botch Guy because he gives so quick reactions to watching Raw or SmackDown, things that go on. He is so quick to the trigger of giving you guys, like, hilarious analysis, but really authentic analysis at the same time. Super high energy, right? Like, this guy has magnetic energy. A great addition to this show on our network here. So check him out on YouTube, The Botch Guy. But if you also love dogs, like, I love dogs, I've got a dog, and so does The Botch Guy. And he's got a golden doodle. So if you haven't seen a golden doodle, I'll be able to say that easily. And believe it or not, his dog has his own YouTube channel that's growing pretty quickly. So if you're wondering what that is, if you love golden doodles or just dogs in general, or you love The Botch Guy and you want to see what kind of dog he has and really get some great information, head on over to YouTube and subscribe to his dog's channel. Yes, I'm serious. His dog's channel. I'm not joking. It's Golden Doodle Botchy. So that's Golden Doodle is one word, and then Botchy, B-O-T-C-H-Y, is the YouTube channel. Hit that subscribe button. And, you know, you may be wondering, what do I want to watch dogs for, right? Like, well, but here's what you get, right? Like, he not only is entertaining, and they're very quick videos. You don't have to worry about dedicating, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30 minutes to a video. They're usually, you know, 5-6 minutes tops, or most of them are even less, which is great because all of our attention spans are like zero, right? I get it. But he has videos on there that actually show you how to train a golden doodle puppy dog. He has obviously some just entertaining videos about his dog barking back, just really, really funny, funny stuff. So again, what you want to do is go over to YouTube and search for Golden Doodle Botchy. Hit that subscribe button. I promise you'll enjoy it. It's just very stress-free in today's insane environment, right? Like, with everything going on, you want some entertainment, easy to follow stuff. Subscribe to Golden Doodle Botchy. All right. So let's talk about the Royal Rumble 2004. So let's fire up that flux capacitor. As I mentioned, I've been warming it up here, and we're about to step into the DeLorean. And I really haven't watched Back to the Future in quite a while. It just kind of came to my mind. But here's what we're going to do. I want to run down, obviously, how this program happened first, and then I will give you the card that ensued with Triple H versus HBK on the pay-per-view here in 2004. So here's the setup. Triple H at Armageddon defeated Goldberg and Kane in a triple threat match to win the World Heavyweight Championship after interference from Evolution, which at that time, again, was Ric Flair and Batista. And then on December 15th of that, of 2003, Michaels and RVD defeated Evolution in a handicap match when HBK pinned Triple H. And then as a result of that, HBK earned a World Heavyweight Championship match against Triple H on the December 29th episode of Raw in his hometown of San Antonio, Texas. At that time, and I remember this very, very well, which is crazy to think as I'm reading how this whole thing got built up. Michaels seemingly defeated Triple H to win the title, but the Raw general manager Eric Bischoff declared that the match was a draw due to both men's shoulders being down on the mat during the pinfall. As a result, Triple H retained the title, as all ties go to the champion. On the January 5th episode of Raw, the self-proclaimed Sheriff, Stone Cold Steve Austin, announced that Triple H would defend the title against Shawn in a last man standing match at the Rumble. So that's how it came about here. And I do remember that. I remember that match very, very well with how good it was. It was pay-per-view quality on that December 29th episode of Raw. And this is when championships being defended on free TV, i.e. Raw or SmackDown, felt really, really important. It felt special. And I remember how there was actually a sense of urgency and actually a sense of excitement, right? Like Triple H could lose the championship here. And obviously we know that didn't happen, but HBK was and Triple H put on a hell of a match. If you haven't seen it, also, December 29th, main event of Raw, awesome. And not only that, Stone Cold did return that actual night and did, I believe, stunned Eric Bischoff, so as the Sheriff. So that is how the whole thing got built up, at least to this particular match. Obviously, their entire rivalry is much, much more in depth. But let me give you the rundown and the rest of the card that was on this pay-per-view. So here's what happened. There was only 7 matches. The number one match, the very first match on the show, Victoria with Steven Richards defeated Molly Holly in a singles match. Evolution defeated the Dudley Boys in a tables match for the World Tag Team Championship in only 4 minutes. Yikes. 4 minutes and 23 seconds. Rey Mysterio defeated Jamie Noble with Nydia. Remember Nydia? I believe she was part of Tough Enough. In a singles match for the WWE Cruiserweight Championship in 3 minutes. Eddie Guerrero, just seeing his name on the card is just awesome, defeated Chavo, who was also with Chavo Guerrero Sr., in a singles match that the match lasted 8 minutes and 3 seconds. Brock Lesnar defeated Hardcore Holly in a singles match for the WWE Championship in 6 minutes and 30 seconds. Wow. I don't remember Hardcore Holly ever getting a championship opportunity. At least I haven't thought about that consciously without actually being nudged to remind that, yeah, he did. And I guess he did. I'll have to go back, I'm sure, to jog my memory. But okay, fine. 6 minutes, 30 seconds to beat Hardcore Holly. I mean, that's... Now I'm curious to watch that match. Triple H versus Shawn Michaels in a last man standing match for the World Heavyweight Championship. That match, I'm not going to give you the outcome because, you know, I don't want to spoil something from 17 years ago. Of course, I'm being very sarcastic. 22 minutes and 46 seconds this match went. And then in the final match of the night, Chris Benoit won the 30-man Royal Rumble match for a world championship opportunity at WrestleMania 20. Chris Benoit ended up last eliminating the Big Show, who it came down to Benoit and Big Show, if you remember. And then, by the way, the time on this was 1 hour, 1 minute, and 30 seconds, as far as how long the Rumble match went that particular night. But the final image with Chris Benoit and Big Show, I do remember Chris Benoit had Big Show draped over the ropes and Benoit just would not let go in that headlock, and he was persistent and persistent and persistent, and he hung on and hung on and hung on and hung on, and he finally was able to pull the Big Show, or at least get him off balance enough to eliminate the Big Show outside the ring. I do remember that very vividly. The crowd went crazy. And again, yes, we all know the tragedy that is Chris Benoit. We all know that. I'm putting that aside to just kind of give him credit for that particular match and really his body of work professionally, okay? Professionally. I know every time I say Chris Benoit's name, we all know what we think of. We get it. And I want to, you know, once in a while focus on Chris Benoit, the wrestler, the performer. That's, you know, once in a while, it's nice to kind of put aside the absolute disaster and just sad, tragic event that happened in 2007 and look at some of the great things he did. And certainly he could have been one of the greatest of all time, and WWE wouldn't have completely erased them from his, from their memory, you know, but rightfully so. I don't blame them for doing so, given the absolute, you know, mess that happened. So, but Chris Benoit won the Royal Rumble that year, and that's the card. So this, the Triple H Shawn Michaels match was the match that preceded was before the actual Royal Rumble match itself. So let's get into it, right? Like, let's dive in to some audio from that match, because that's what we all want to listen to. That's what all brings us into the moment. I can sit here and I can talk about that match, but there's, damn it, there's nothing like actually hearing some of the audio from that match. So let's dive into to a little bit of sound from that match.
Triple H has got back up to his feet. And Michaels went deep. He went long with the steel chair to the face of the heavyweight champion. Man, did you hear that sound? That was serious. Listen to this. That sounded like a gun going off, JR. Triple H tried to get his hand up, but to no avail. He got a full-on shot with that steel chair right between the eyes. And now the champion is, he has been busted open. The world's heavyweight champion is now in for his gut check.
What did you expect, busted open with a hit like that from that steel chair? It's a miracle his head's still intact.
Who will have the greatest will to win? Who is going to be able to overcome the pain in Michaels with that forearm shot, taking down the champion? Both men are down. The referee now will utilize the count on both men.
Shawn Michaels, I mean, he's a desperate man. He just literally launched himself with what looked like...
So at this point in the match, I did jump ahead a little bit in the match, but Shawn Michaels is a complete bloody mess. And sometimes I would say, you know, Shawn Michaels wears that red crimson mask so well. I mean, he almost wears it as good as Ric Flair did with his bleach blonde hair. Obviously, Shawn doesn't have bleach blonde hair, but Shawn Michaels covered in blood. There's just something special about it with him when he gets it just right. I love it. And you hear that particular moment with the chair shot. Again, it's a sign of the times when you have chair shots to the face. And you hear that that call by Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler, and Jerry even saying it sounded like a gun going off. Imagine even just that reference today, right? I mean, we've become so softened. It's amazing to think that this was only, you know, 15, 16, 17 years ago, and this type of language was not even thought twice of, right? I mean, personally, I could give a damn less. I mean, I don't care. I don't find it offensive or concerning, but imagine that today, even just that small reference to a gun. Oh, good God. But that was a nice visual. I know you guys can't see it, but again, if you go to the network or YouTube, obviously, I'm sure you can find it there. This match was bloody, but it made sense to be bloody. It wasn't bloody for the sake of being bloody. So again, that was just the reason I chose that is it's a sign of the times, but it's also a little bit of a microcosm and a symbolic quick few seconds of what this match meant and what this match was about. It was brutality, but it was a great story. And the pacing of Triple H Shawn Michaels is so appreciated to me. It's not lost on me. Maybe other fans that have gone through Ruthless Aggression and or the Attitude Era, or even prior to that, if you're, you know, older, an older fan, have been watching for several decades. The pacing of the matches today is so, it's been so excelled and sped up that you can't digest what the hell's going on. And the moves don't mean nearly as much as they used to. Now, that doesn't mean every match in the Attitude Era or the Ruthless Aggression Era was certainly perfect. It wasn't, of course not. And there were some awful, awful matches. But when you take the style of 17 years ago, the pacing, and you translate it into, or you compare it to today's product, it is night and day. It is night and day. And yes, you have Triple H, you have HBK, two legends in the business. I would agree, legends. Like, they are legends, both of them. Yes, even Triple H. And that definitely helps things, of course, being just ring generals at that point in their careers. But I love, again, the pacing is what really stood out to me. Obviously, the great storytelling, the brutality. But pacing in a match, I think, is something that is overlooked and forgotten about. And it's not as if we have evolved in terms of intelligence that much, or the ability to absorb more information over the last 17 years as a species. We're vastly the same. So our human psychology, our human evolution of the brain has not developed that much where we can absorb so much information so quickly in terms of being able to absorb more. So my whole point of this is the matches today just go too damn fast. There's too much where, you know, you could do five moves in the time that you should be doing one move just because you feel like you need to constantly be hitting or kicking or flipping around. So just a small thing, but I wanted to point that out. So that is a little bit of audio. I want to get to a little more audio here, and then we'll get to the finish.
And the referee says the match continues at a long 8 count. Well, I think this match is to the point where both of these men, Triple H and Shawn Michaels, they're on their back and the referee's counting. They're going to... Oh, this could do it. The game hooking Michaels out. Agreed. Not agreed. God, what a tenor's got to be in. If the game can get back to his feet, I don't see Michaels getting back in this one. The bloody face of Michaels striking the canvas with great force. And the game trying to pull himself back up. The count is on both men as we speak. And now it's only on Shawn Michaels.
Triple H is up. Seven. I think, Shawn, you'd be wise to stay down.
Count is eight.
Nine.
The count is nine.
He's up. The referee, he's got one foot up. The referee says he's up.
Referee's discretion here. It's a judgment call in that environment.
So that was Shawn Michaels surviving a pedigree in that match. I mean, we're very close to the finish now. I mean, about a move and a half away, and we'll get to the finish in just a second. But going back to the pacing of this match, not every match needs to be in slow motion. But when you allow moves to breathe, you allow the audience to see and feel what you're doing. Every move you do means more, which means the announcers also have time to describe to the at-home audience and tell the story that you want at a much easier pace than having to like speed read through a book. It's easier and faster or easier and just much, honestly, more enjoyable when a story is slower, I think, when you have time to absorb things and every move means more. I mean, they were at the point where DDTs were actually cause for concern of not being able to get up for the 10 count. I mean, suplexes, basic moves. And it was just great. Both men are a bloody mess. The ring is covered in blood. It was just a complete, as Jim Ross always says, a car crash. And certainly having a Hall of Fame announce team with a Hall of Fame talent in the ring does add to this match. There's no doubt about it. This is Jim Ross at his absolute best. I mean, there's nobody better than Jim Ross ever. And I don't think there will ever be anyone better than Jim Ross. But this match, again, the pacing, I cannot overstate enough how important that is to really even today's product. If everyone just slow the F down and stop worrying about your constant flips and flies and everything else, I think moves would mean more. Matches would be able to easier to understand. And I think it would overall be able to tell a better story because you're able to just allow the fans to absorb what's going on. I mean, it's fairly a very simple concept, but it's kind of falling on deaf ears, I know, on today's product and today's talent and today's creative. I'm sure it is, because everyone wants a five-star match. Everyone wants that just crazy moves, move, instead of actually telling a damn good story. So, I mean, I understand it. I don't agree with it, but I get it. And this spits in the face of today's, quote, five-star match definition. That's what I love about this, too, is that it is the antithesis, I think, of somebody's definition of a five-star match. It really contradicts that in a very, very real way of someone who defines a five-star match in 2021 as how many cool reversals, it's about athleticism, it's about the moves, it's about, you know, the flash and the fly. I would love to talk to somebody that literally believes and genuinely believes that that is what makes a five-star match. And Chris Jericho, actually, I think it was on, I don't know if it was on his own podcast or someone else's or a YouTube channel. Chris Jericho's everywhere. But I recently saw something where Chris Jericho said, would you rather have a five-star match or have a match that makes money? And there's a difference. There's an absolute difference. Because you can have, quote, a five-star match, but if the people aren't invested in the characters and the story, that doesn't necessarily means that it generated money. There is a difference. You can have a five-star match that doesn't generate money. You know how? Two guys that don't have a great character story, don't have great depth, that go in and blow you away with their athleticism, their kickouts, their finishes, all that. That could be a five-star match. But you fail to take into consideration in today's definition of story, character development, the basics. And so there's a difference. This was a money-making and five-star match, in my opinion. This was absolutely just a classic to me. So enough ranting, enough raving. Let's get to the finish, which, I mean, literally happened about a second later here. Oh, wow. And when you also look at the fact that Earl Hebner is the referee, a legendary referee, and you have the Fink on the mic. I mean, it is just it's like the old bands back together. It's just a great thing to see. Howard, obviously, the Fink, one of the best voices of all time, no doubt. And it's amazing that, you know, you hear the crowd boo and boo the hell out of it, thinking they didn't get a finish and they wanted a declarative winner. But this is the perfect move in this particular scenario. Triple H, World Heavyweight Champion, great heel champion, and you have HBK, the beloved babyface, perhaps the top babyface on Raw, and the fans want to see Triple H get his ass kicked, and the fans are just angry as hell that you have a finish like this where Michaels beat Triple H, but he couldn't get to his feet. And it, I think, saves the babyface, because if this would have been a regular match, that would have been the 1-2-3. But it also saves Triple H because he didn't really lose. It was a tie. Both men couldn't get to their feet, even though Michaels had him beat. It's a genius move, and it continues to put heat on Triple H for really just lady luck on his side of being beat. But due to the stipulations of the match, it's a tie, which all ties go to the champion. Therefore, you are still the World Heavyweight Champion. So the crowd erupted, obviously, with the Sweet Chin Music, but then booed the hell out of the decision because, oh, well, Triple H is still champion, and they all know what that means. So, yeah, this one is an absolute classic. I know that the crowd's booing at the end, and typically with my nostalgia shows, the crowd is losing their minds at the end of the match. In this case, nothing wrong with a little heel heat. And could we see the same finish at this year's Royal Rumble? I think there's a distinct possibility. You know, maybe where Kevin Owens is able to incapacitate Roman Reigns, but it's with his last gasp of energy, hitting a stunner, whatever it may be, and Roman's down and out, but so is Kevin Owens from being beat up for 20 minutes. Therefore, the tie goes to the champion. I think I'm onto something. I think it's a great way to save face on both sides. You have Roman retain the belt, but you also have Kevin Owens look like a winner in a tie decision. I think it's a great, great way to not make Kevin Owens continue to downward spiral in terms of his losses to Roman. And I would actually argue that I say downward spiral, but I mean, I should have meant consecutive losses. I think even in his losses, Kevin Owens has been elevated. And that's what it means to be elevated in the loss, is what Kevin Owens has done with Roman Reigns over the last couple of pay-per-views. So this one could be the same, where Kevin doesn't lose, Roman doesn't lose, but since it's a tie, guess who remains champion? I think that is the perfect finish to this match, where, you know, people maybe say, oh, Kevin Owens lost another one. Well, he didn't really lose, right? He put Roman down, but he couldn't get to his feet. I think I just called the finish of the 2021 Universal Championship match in about 10 days. 11 days, actually, as I speak. So, early spoiler alert. I mean, I think I may be onto something. Just saying. So, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode of Nostalgia. It always is a blast to have us get in this time machine, or the DeLorean, or whatever analogy you want to use, to go back in time and look at these really fun and goosebump moments, at least in my eyes, of course, where it just brings you back. It brings you into that moment. It brings you into that part of your life, wherever you were in 2004. Or maybe you've never seen it before and you're a new fan or a younger fan and you really weren't paying attention. You were really young during the Ruthless Aggression era. I know I do have a lot of younger listeners. Then I'd recommend you watch this. It's very, very different, of course, than today's product in pacing, number one. Brutality, number two. And it's an all-star roster with an all-star referee, with an all-star announce team, with an all-star ring announcer. I mean, it's just up and down the lineup. It's quite the different feel of the product back in 2004, 17 years ago, which is insane to think. I mean, in 2004 for me, in January of 2004, what was I doing? Well, number one, I was 19 years old. I might have still been innocent, so to speak. 19, though, is when things really exploded for me in a lot of different ways. So I'll leave that to the imagination. All right. Well, before I overshare, I think I'm going to close the podcast here, guys. Thank you for listening, of course, being a listener and trying us out, if you're long term, thank you as well. All right, everybody. Thank you so much. Again, the mailbag episode I will be recording right after this. So both episodes will be available to you for your listening pleasure. And NXT review, of course, is coming. So everybody, thanks so much. Stay safe, and I'll talk to you next time.